You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Today's specials are brought to you by Fancy Feast. From impeccable pâtés to silky broths to chef-inspired creations, a memorable mealtime experience is always on the menu for your cat. Learn more at fancyfeast.com.
Experience the musicals of tomorrow, today. Get a glimpse inside the blueprint of an original musical being developed in real time with New York Theatre Barn's podcast, The Musicals of Tomorrow.
The music of tomorrow.
I'm Joe Barros.
And I'm Jen Sandler.
And we're the hosts of The Musicals of Tomorrow. As the Artistic Director and Associate Artistic Director of New York Theatre Barn, we make space to speak in community with musical theatre writers and their creative teams.
Lifting up songs from original culture-shifting musicals in development and introducing them to a global audience has become a major part of New York Theatre Barn's evolving story.
Each original musical's intention, content, and journey are unique and extraordinary to the storytellers who create them. We believe that there is no formula for musical theater except authenticity. We recently spoke with the writers of Borderline, Ariana Garber and Benjamin Velez, and the writer of The Lucky Boy, Kirsten Childs.
Our first musical is Borderline, which has music and lyrics by Benjamin Velez and a book by Ariana Garber. The show features direction by Sarna Lapine.
Borderline is a new musical dramedy about a girl living with borderline personality disorder and struggling for normalcy amidst a revolving door of therapists, medications, and dysfunctional relationships. This new musical is a deeply personal story that explores the highs and lows, heartache, and absurdity of living on the borderline.
And now, here's our conversation with the writers of Borderline, Ariana Garber and Benjamin Velez. Hi, everyone.
We are certainly excited about this new musical. Borderline personality disorder seems like quite an untold story on the stage, but musical theater seems like a fitting medium to examine such a story. So tell us what inspired you to write a musical about borderline personality and this story in particular.
Well, a lot of the experience were based on my past experiences. And I wrote a thesis for my master's degree on this exact thing, on borderline personality disorder. And one of the things that I thought I was missing was a way for the audience to connect and to really understand what's going on in such a complicated sort of lifestyle. And it kind of dawned upon me that I was like, I need this to be a musical. It has to be a musical. It has to sort of have that music to allow the invitation for people to come in and to understand what's going on and to really be invited into this world. So it was sort of born out of an existing screenplay that existed and needed to be sort of pushed to the next level in order for it to really take off and really be able to tell the story that I wanted it to tell.
And Ariana and I were actually introduced by a college friend. We went to the same college, but we didn't know each other there. And it wasn't until many, many years later that we got introduced. I had actually never even heard, like I had heard about borderline personality disorder, but I couldn't tell you what it was when I first met Ariana. And just hearing her talk about it and her own experiences with it, I immediately just felt the need to start writing songs. And the first draft that we churned out of this, it was within like 2 months of meeting. It was very, very fast. I mean, it mostly has changed since then.
And Sarna, how did you come to be a part of this team?
Benjamin, maybe you should start that.
Well, I was lucky enough to be roommates with Sarna way back when. And so we've been friends for a long time. This just felt like a show I had to show Sarna. And Ariana and I actually first met with Sarna that fall that we started working on it. We loved the way she talked about it and had a lot of amazing ideas. And we got an opportunity at the Westin Playhouse and we were able to work on it. And then kind of a year or two later, I don't remember exactly, we got the opportunity with a producer on board to finally put a team together. And we wanted Sarna, and Sarna was still really excited about the piece. And it just really worked out that we were able to all come together on it. I liked that what Joe said about how it's not something that he's seen on the stage before, because I feel like it's easy to loop all mental illness stories into the same bucket. Like Next to Normal deals with bipolar, and Evan Hansen, he's also dealing with mental health issues. But borderline is its own unique thing. They shouldn't be ashamed of it, and they should get the help, because a lot of people can be really benefited by that help.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we've talked about this. There's been a lot of shows about mental health, and it's something that has had such a stigma. But there shouldn't be a stigma against talking about this. And sometimes singing about it and talking about it in spoken word, like you do in theater, makes people unafraid to then get help. And I think that's so special and important.
Well, that's what attracted me immediately to Ariana. She's very self-deprecating, and her comedy is sharp and on point. And I didn't want to tackle this story unless there was a strong comedic element to it. I think that the way Ariana has activated the characters, and especially the main character of Anna, comedically, it was really exciting for me too.
So I think let's talk about our first song.
Yeah, I'm happy to set this up. So this is the end of Act One. In the beginning of the show, Anna has not yet been diagnosed with borderline, and she has a run-in with the law where she's assigned to see in order to try to avoid going to prison. She begins sessions with this doctor, and the doctor tells her that she has borderline personality disorder. It's very hard to give diagnoses because it comes with a lot of strings and it's not an exact science. And Anna kind of rejects it and zones out of that moment. And this song is her kind of dealing with finally having a name for this, all the feelings that she's had up until then, her whole life.
And this is being sung by the amazing Michaela Diamond from the Cher Show.
Truly amazing, yes.
Truly amazing. So here is Borderline.
There's a girl I see in the mirror. I touch her face and my finger traces her eye. There's a line between me and her. Sometimes that line's a blur and I don't know who I am, who I am,
who I am.
I wish it was clear. Am I there? Am I here? One of us is sick and one is fine. But where's the line? Where's the line? Where's the line? Ah, do you hear me screaming? Ah, is it in my head? Why am I always feeling stuck between sick and fine? Stuck on the borderline. Sweat, bad dream, back from Wonderland. Fall down, fall up, they don't understand. One cut, just one, just to let it out slowly. Helpless, stop, you can fight it, just try it, just try. Am I neurotic, psychotic, or am I in between? Am I depressed or suicidal, or am I in between? Am I insane or just dramatic, or am I in between? In between fake and real, in between think and feel, in between stop.
like I'm fine when I'm trapped on the, trapped on the. I will not be crazy. No, it's in your head. I don't need pills to make me feel like I'm fine. Free from the borderline. Free from the borderline.
Wow. I know you have development of the show and we'd love to hear about it.
Absolutely. We're lucky to have a wonderful producer, Josh Goodman, who is helping us develop the show. And we have a wonderful music director, David Gardos. And Josh has been putting together a team. I think we all decided that in-person development is a lot easier for a musical. So we're going to attempt a table read of a new draft. We're super excited. Just being able to work with Sarna on the dramaturgy of it all, Ariana and I have done a new version that we're really excited to hear out loud. And yeah, I'm super excited that we've been able to keep the ball rolling.
I think we've used our time well, just working through the text and the music really carefully together and just continuing to find the balance of dramedy, which is always a unique thing to explore on stage. And I think developing the characters, primarily Ariana and her father, John, I think that's taken a lot of time to develop. And I also think the character of both Dana and Dr. Brenner and their friendship and their relationship as colleagues has also really grown as we've pursued this. I just think it's great to talk about the language and the characters in such deep detail. And it's going to be wonderful to hear actors have the chance to read it and hear all this work come to fruition.
And I think just going on what Sarna was saying about language, I think mental health in general, they're so hard to find the language to describe the conditions and the illnesses and sort of how people can describe their own emotions about it. And so part of working with Sarna on this was really finding that language that allowed our characters to come through and to understand what they're going through in a way that's communicable to the audience and to people listening to them.
Absolutely. To set up the next song. So one aspect we haven't talked about with Anna is that she's an artist. A lot of her expression comes through in her art, but she hasn't, she's kind of had a series of dead end jobs and she's been put under pressure by her dad to find a way to support herself. And the art isn't something she's been able to take seriously. So in the Borderline Act One finale, she decides she's going to reject that diagnosis and she's going to stop taking the pills that her doctor has prescribed for her. And in Act Two, she at first there's like a high, manic high from the beginning of going off the meds, but then she kind of begins to spiral and eventually reaches a state of dissociation. And she stops going to her therapist. And this song is sung from the point of view of her therapist, Dr. Brenner, who is very concerned. And she actually does something which is non-traditional. She went to the house to see if Anna's okay. And she has a fight with Anna's dad. And this song, it kind of is Dr. Brenner, in non-literal terms, kind of singing about Anna's state of being lost right now, as Anna's gotten lost in her painting. And to try to represent the state of mind that Anna's in. Her bedroom has kind of grown into this cathedral-like space where her art is all over. And you'll hear talk of blood in the song, but it's referencing this red paint that Anna is using.
And who is singing the song?
Brianna Marie Parnum. She is wonderful. And she's playing Dr. Brenner, who is Anna's therapist, doctor.
So here it is.
There's a girl who lives alone in the shadows of her mind. Next to dreams, she's thrown away. Next to doubts, she's left behind. And she hums a little song, just a whisper of a sound in the land of lost and found. She was scared to be herself. She was scared of what she'd see. So she's hiding in the dark and she's thrown away the key. If you travel there, beware. There's no way to turn around from the land
of lost and found. She's been waiting for a while for a person to appear. She's been lonely in the dark where each minute lasts a year. While she waits, she hums her song, just a whisper of a sound in the land of lost and found. In her loneliness, she cries, and her tears as red as blood, as they stream across her face and they sink into the mud. Soon she stands inside a pool and can barely see the ground. She'll be lost if she's not found. And the pool of red begins to spread. The tide is turning and the waves are churning as the melody she hums rapidly becomes a symphony of sorrow, crashing as it surges, reaching a crescendo. Buried down below, someone reaches out a hand. Should she grab it or let go? Could there really be a light in the darkness that surrounds? Will the girl be lost or found?
So good.
I want to make sure I stress that despite the two songs you heard from the show, it is chock full of comedic songs as well.
It's true.
But we felt like these two were good ones for this. We feel so lucky to have been a part of this.
Yeah, really great.
We're so lucky to have you guys.
Thank you. We'll see you guys soon.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Our second new musical is The Lucky Boy, which has book, music, and lyrics by Kirsten Childs. The show features direction by John Simpkins and musical direction by Jennifer Peacock.
The Lucky Boy is a satirical one-act musical which examines what happens when a country is held hostage by a tyrant's rule. Cruel King Ambrose kills citizens who don't proclaim him adorable. When it's predicted that an illegal alien baby named Lucky will grow up to surpass him in adorability, Ambrose throws the child into a nuclear waste bin. 18 years later, Ambrose discovers Lucky's still alive and hella adorable.
Here's our conversation with the writer of The Lucky Boy, Kirsten Childs. We're so excited to have you here with us tonight.
Well, I am thrilled to be here.
You are definitely one of my favorite writers, and your body of work has a real depth and range to it with themes of fantasy, folklore, oral tradition. And this is one of your newest projects. I'm also a big fan of your musical, The Bubbly Black Girl Sheds Her Chameleon Skin, which played Playwrights Horizons in 2000 and City Center Encores in a fantastic 2017 presentation. It's a semi-biographical work. Also, the year I moved to New York, I was lucky enough to see a musical at the Vineyard, Miracle Brothers, which is about, which is about half brothers, one black, one white, one a slave, and one who's freed, Fernando and Green Eyes. And you set the show in 17th century Brazil, and you took this incredible tradition in their stories. Your characters were dolphins who transformed into humans for sport to tell their stories. So again, like I said, the scope and range of your work is just incredible. When I first heard the song, that we're going to present tonight, I said, oh my God, that's so Kirsten Childs. That so reminds me of her.
That's a nice thing to hear that you actually have a voice. That's really great. Thank you.
When you hear Miracle Brothers, it has a different feel and sound with this rich samba-infused score. And I remember there's a fantastic song in that show called Mundo Pariso, which I really, really love and stuck with me. And of course, Funked Up Fairy Tales is another fantastic show of yours. And I won't read your resume
anymore. And we can't forget Bella. Bella is also, I'm a former Playwrights Horizons employee, and Bella is also a great show. We love Bella.
Thank you. To tell the story of this musical.
Yeah, basically the king is a mess and needs to be validated and actually told that he is the most adorable person in the world. And it is foretold that there's a baby that is going to become more adorable than him. So he just cannot have that happen. So he takes the baby, goes to a nuclear site, and throws the baby into a toxic waste dumpster. But there are these scientists, as luck would have it, who have been conducting experiments, and they have put heavy water in this particular waste dumpster, and they have bombarded it with particles of adorabilium in an attempt to counter nuclear toxicity in human DNA cells. As a result of this, since the baby is in that dumpster with the heavy water and adorabilium bombardment, he is now not only immune to radiation poisoning, but he is 10 times more adorable than the king. So fade in, fade out. It's 18 years later, and Lucky Boy, whose name is Lucky, ironically, happens to meet up with the daughter of the king, this beautiful young girl. She is Her Royal Highness Princess Vocal Fry. And so the Lucky Boy and Princess Vocal Fry fall madly in love. The king actually realizes that Lucky is that baby he tried to get rid of. And so he tries to get rid of him again by saying, hey, if you want to marry my daughter, you have to go and get 3 golden hairs from the devil's head, which is impossible to ask because the devil brutally murders everybody who tries to get his hair, as as devils are wont to do. So will Lucky actually be able to get these hairs? Will true love prevail, or will the king's nefarious plot work? You'll have to come and see the story of the Lucky Boy.
Well, I have to ask, because so much of He Who Will Not Be Named, that seems like little snippets of him in the show.
Well, here's the thing. Fairy tales are really primal things, and this is based on a fairy tale. They're stories about the ways we recognize our humanity in these very broad strokes, and they're also things where right prevails, where good prevails. They're a yardstick by which we can examine our souls. During 2016, I was sort of struggling with a sort of powerlessness, the powerlessness that I felt. And so I thought, maybe I'll try to deal with this in a way that not only brings me less stress, but brings me joy and makes me crack up.
We're going to bring on John Simpkins and Jennifer Peacock to talk more about the development. Yay!
They have been so crucial. Crucial to this. John Simpkins has this amazing program at Penn State that commissions living artists to work with their musical theater students. These students are amazing. And John invited me to craft a musical around these students, and it was really fun to do. And I'll let you talk, John.
Yeah, John, tell us more about this program and how Kirsten came to be a part of it.
Of course. Well, thanks, Joe and Jen, for having us. Like you, Joe, I've been a huge Kirsten Childs fan for many years. So we have a commissioning program. We call it our New Musicals Initiative. And what we do is we invite a writer or writing team that we're commissioning out to campus. We don't want to talk about any ideas for shows until they have a chance to meet a very specific group of young people, the artists for whom they're going to be writing. And so that Kirsten came out and met the third year students. And the way that it works is We put the writers and the students together. We want the writers to hear what are on the minds of our young artist students as they're kind of deep in the midst of their training. And we want our students to connect with these incredible writers that are writing right now for the American musical. So then after a few days, the writers go back to New York and we start talking with the writer about what they might want to work on. And so for Kirsten, she very quickly had this idea to adapt fairy tale, or to turn this fairy tale, the Devil with the Three Golden Hairs, into a musical called The Lucky Boy. And what I love so much about what she did with it is I feel like Kirsten is joyfully and lovingly taking our country and our culture and our society to task, but she's doing it in a way that we can laugh along with it until we realize the point that she's making. And then hopefully we're horrified into the action that we all want to take. So if that, as far as I'm concerned, if that doesn't line up with this generation of young artists, what does? I mean, these are the young people in college that are going to go out and change the world and do the things that we couldn't figure out how to do. And it's our job to give them material that speaks to now and speaks to them. And so that's kind of the underpinning of the commission. And so then Kirsten writes a draft, and we spend the kind of the majority of the senior year, the fourth year for these students, working with the writer, and they drop in on us, and we do a concert at 54 Below mid-year, and then a big reading on campus. And the way that we sort of engage with these writers is that if that all goes well, we can throw it into the season planning process at Penn State and perhaps produce it, and then maybe even walk it out into the world as a partner in a professional production.
I love that. Jennifer, what has it been like working with Kirsten on the music?
A total dream. She's the most wonderful, open, collaborative writer to work with ever, and it's fun. She has a voice throughout the whole play, but each song has its own distinct style and character too, but it all still feels like Kirsten. It's just, we just have the best time, and I feel like I have a lot of, she lets me just run loose with stuff, tells me what she likes and what she doesn't like.
This woman has such taste, and you all are going to know so much more about her. She is amazing. Let me just say that. All right, I'll be quiet now.
So let's talk about our first song. We have the amazing Jasmine Forsberg here tonight.
This song is called All for a Taste of Liberty, and it's sung by the mother of the lucky boy when the lucky boy is just a newborn babe. Her name is Amastaza, and she is fleeing a war-torn country, coming to the kingdom of King Ambrose, who is this tyrant, for a better life. She's gone over to the Immigration Bureau, but unfortunately, at the Immigration Bureau, they're a little xenophobic, so they call the deportation squad on her. Unfortunately, she's going to be kicked out of the country. But there's a kind soul at the Immigration Bureau who actually supplies citizenship papers to the baby. At the beginning of this song, you're going to hear Amastaza sort of meeting with the Bureau. And by the end, you know she's getting ready to get kicked out. And she's basically saying goodbye to her child. And it's going to be performed by the incredible Jasmine Forsberg, who originated the role when it was done at Penn State in the original production. You'll love her. Hopefully you'll love the song, All for a Taste of Liberty.
Here she is.
Stole across the border in the dead of the night, running away from a land set on fire, running away from the hate of a hate-filled mob, running and hiding and silently praying that no one will catch me, that I will be staying here under the radar with my low-paying job. All for a taste of liberty, all for something more than poverty and misery and endless war, endless war, endless war. Saving every penny, skimping on meals, no time for sickness, can't pay the doctor. Learning a new language, the grammar is driving me wild. But I'm gonna learn it, to grovel, to beg, to tell you I'll pay you an arm and a leg, to make sure that I secure freedom for
spend your life looking over your shoulder to deal with it all standing tall, both feet on the ground, to be safe in a place far away from war's drama, and if that means you can't stay with your mama. What you ever lost can't compare to what you found. Savor the taste of liberty. It is nothing less than hope and opportunity.
When she started singing the song, I was in such heaven at the audition night. I guess I was like, oh my gosh, I hope she can do this show.
Question for you. You've been now a part of two shows that have had lives outside of Penn State. You also were a part of Love and Hate Nation. Why do you think this program is so important?
This program is beyond important because it gives you a chance as an artist to truly create. I feel like as a young artist, all young artists, you know, we take from what's around us, but there isn't always an opportunity for us to truly build something from the ground up. And with this program that John has brought to Penn State, it gives us this chance to explore and really make something of our own. Not only is that important for us just as artists, but as humans too, to be able to have that passion and that power, it's so, so, so special.
And I know both of your professional credits you would not have without this program. So it speaks for itself, the connections it's making for people.
Absolutely. 1000%.
Awesome. Well, we do have another song tonight. So we'd love to know a little bit about Yeah before we see it.
The name of the second song is Yeah. It's a meet and greet trio between Princess Vocal Fry, her true love Lucky, and her father, the tyrant King Ambrose. Just to set it up, what just happened before the song starts is that Vocal Fry has confessed to her father that she's fallen in love. And when she starts describing who she's fallen in love with, the king is like, that sounds like that baby I murdered like 18 years ago. But when the grown man comes in, he knows for a fact that it is that baby because his skin is glowing. It's radioactively glowing, and his eyes are shooting laser beams since he floated around in that nuclear waste so many years ago. And so he realizes that he's got a big problem. So without further ado, the fantastic Kate Fahey as the completely ditzy yet sharp as a tack Princess Vocal Fry, the fantastic Aidan Cole as a deliciously wicked King Ambrose, and the utterly adorable Malik Bilbrew as the utterly adorable Lucky Boy.
Clarify one thing. The song's not called Yeah. It's called Yeah.
And you'll see why now. Here is Yeah.
A lucky boy who would marry the king's daughter because he was 10 times more adorable than the king. But it was impossible.
Ooh, that sounds like him now, Daddy.
No one could survive a toxic dumpster. Could they?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, he's sweet and shiny. He's got starry eyes that pin you down like a laser. You need to understand that when he holds my hand, I feel a shock like a taser. And did I mention I got so much natural tension? I could cut it with a razor. I am not lying. I feel it crying. When that boy talks to me, oh my God, it's so electrifying. He says,
yeah. Queen of queens, girl. Yeah, you mutate my genes, girl. Yeah, do you know what that means, girl?
Yeah.
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 I'd like to give a shout out to May her soul rest in peace, bringing V Fry into the world.
Who?
V Fry, the vocal fry, your daughter. Although I don't deserve her, I'd like to ask you for her hand in marriage.
As you've all heard before, you know I'm not a person with a high tolerance level. I knew I had to find a way that I could send that lucky boy straight to the devil. I'd give permission if he'd meet my one condition. I would finance his whole wedding revel. But I'm not lying, there would be crying. If it turned out like I planned, which was that soon he would be dying, I'd say, yeah. You can wed my daughter. Yeah. First, go across the water. Yeah. And bring me back
3 golden hairs from the devil's head.
3 golden hairs from the devil's head? That's all you want?
Any man who brings me 3 golden hairs from the devil's head will definitely marry my daughter. Full disclosure, certain death could be involved.
Not in a thing, King Baby. Listen to me.
I was a youngster found inside a toxic dumpster. That's how some people deal with orphans. Well, it's a miracle of science that I haven't grown 2 antlers, 3 feathers, and 4 fins. I am no stranger to a little bit of danger. I've got lymph for the soul and endorphins. Harvard don't stream me.
That was awesome. So here's our last question. What makes this show especially different from other iconic Kirsten Child musicals?
I don't know. Each one I really love creating when I'm creating it. What it did was help me feel less powerless. Society is kind of ignoring certain evils. These are things that I deal with in the show. The evils of undrinkable water, like the undrinkable water of Flint, Michigan, of children in cages with parents who have the audacity to dream of a better life for their children, of people disparaging science that could actually really save the human race. This is my way of going, well, I'm going to sort of deal with those issues, have fun with it, but also, ha ha, hell.
I was just going to pick up on that, Kirsten, and say, I think that this show is Kirsten having a debate about the very issues that we need to be struggling with and dealing with and talking about. And I think that kind of makes the topic matter so different than other things that she's written. I think it's just awesome. And then there's always some vintage Kirsten moments that you can't not fall in love with, as far as I'm concerned.
But also, the students really were inspirational in the crafting of this. Just being around them and being around what issues they were interested in was really helpful. It's a collaborative thing, which musical theater is. Also, thank you, Joe and Jen, for this wonderful opportunity. This has been amazing. You cannot imagine how grateful and happy and thrilled I am. I'm not speaking for everybody, but I think I speak for everybody about that. So thank you.
Thanks for fighting the good fight about how artists can have a platform to just work and create and share their work. Thank you for doing that. Tremendous work that you're doing. Thanks, Joe and Jen.
And thank you also for your other work that you're doing, your social programs and your interfacing. That's really important. I think you've been doing it for a while, so kudos to you.
You guys are the sweetest. We love you.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add that, you know, John said this is supposed to be fun. Theater is supposed to be fun. And I think when I had the great privilege of getting to work on Broadway, it was literally community theater with a lot more money. And
I feel the same about my Broadway experience.
We just need to remember that we do it because we love it. And when we don't, we shouldn't do it anymore. Have a wonderful night, and we hope we see you soon in the show.
If you enjoy The Musicals of Tomorrow, please rate, subscribe, and share. The podcast is co-produced and edited by Paul Mox and Hector Flores Jr. Our theme song, The Music of Tomorrow, was written by Lynn Schenkel and Sarah Cooper for their all-female identifying musical, Perpetual Sunshine and the Ghost Girls. Join us next time for more of The Musicals of Tomorrow.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.